Good evening. My name is Marilyn Crotty. For those of you who have not been to one of these sessions before, I'm the director of the Institute of Government at the University of Central Florida, and the city has engaged me to assist in this charter review process. Boy, this is really loud. It's echoing. Could you fix it? First of all, I'm recognizing a lot of faces of people who have been following this process, but how many of you are here for the first time tonight? So this is the first, a fair number of you. Okay, good. So the city has set up a process for this charter review, which largely centers on having these public workshops around the city so that you all have an opportunity to be educated about the charter, what's in it, what's not in it, and also have an opportunity to provide input to the City Council as they will ultimately make some decisions on any changes that they might want to make to the charter. So if you see, we'll go through this slide, and for those of you who've been through this before, my apologies, but I really feel obliged to educate as many folks as possible about this whole process. So tonight we're going to have a pretty quick overview of the process the city has engaged in. We'll talk a little bit about city charters, wherever they are, whatever city they're in. Then at that point, I'll open it up for public comment. So all of you here will have an opportunity, if you have some ideas about changes you'd like to see in this charter, additions, deletions, modifications, we really are interested in hearing your comments. I am going to limit everyone to 3 minutes, and you'll have another opportunity at the end of the workshop to also make additional public comments, perhaps based on some of the things that I share with you that you'll want to then give some comment on. We're going to talk particularly tonight about 2 sections of the charter. The workshops have each focused on different sections, so tonight we'll be reviewing sections 8 and 9, and after that, open it again for public comment, and we'll be done. So we will not take any longer than 8 o'clock. My guess is we won't be here that long, but we have allowed 2 hours, and if there's 2 hours worth of discussion and comments, then I'm happy to continue the meeting until 8 o'clock. So this is what has been happening so far. This is the 3rd of the community workshops. Each of them has been set up in a different district of the city to make it convenient for people to attend that one, but we've had some folks who have been coming to all of the workshops. So there will be 1 more of these public workshops on next week, October 26th. That one will be at the Flagler Palm Coast High School. It will also be from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And at that one, we will focus on the last 2 sections of the charter. So, after the last October workshop, there's another workshop scheduled on November 28th. This is a workshop for the City Council to receive the report that I will generate based on all of these 4 public workshops and the comments that have been made. That workshop will take place at City Hall. It'll begin, I think, at 9 o'clock in the morning, and will go as long as it needs to go. There may be additional charter workshops as the council determines which items they want to address, and an ordinance will be written and discussed and debated during December and January. In order to adopt the ordinance, there will be, again, 2 public hearings where you'll have an opportunity to weigh in on the suggestions that the council is making. And ultimately, these changes, if there are any, will be put on the ballot November 6, 2018, for all of you to vote on. So the basic thing to understand is that no changes can be made to the Palm Coast Charter unless a majority of the voters recommend doing that. So ultimately, you all are the decision makers, but having public input to get to that process is very important. So let's talk a little bit about charters in general. So in Florida, there are currently 412 cities. There's one area that is going to have an election, I think, in November, so we may have the 413 cities at that time, but there's also another city that's having an election in November to unincorporate, to no longer be a city, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in both of those situations. But your charter is your local constitution, so just as we have a state constitution, federal constitution, the city charter for the city of Palm Coast is your charter, and it sets up pretty much the basic form and structure of your government. It's not a very large document, but it is a very important document. It's important that it not be based on the current individuals or personalities of people who are in either elected or appointed office. Sometimes when you do charter reviews, people relate it so closely to who the current manager is, who the current mayor is, who the current council members. The charter is something that's going to be here way past the terms of any of those folks. So you try to have a document that will stand the test of time and not be dependent on the abilities of an individual, but just be a really good structure for the city for the long term. A charter should be pretty simple, clear, and compact. You don't want something that is difficult for people to understand or for the city to abide by. And it should be readable, understandable. You know, a lot of government documents are written in legalese most citizens probably don't even understand a lot of the terminology. So we try in a charter to not have that situation. It's your document. It should be something that you can easily understand. And it's very important that the charter be consistent and be uniform, that there's not something in one section that is contradicted in another section, or something that is not clear in one part and in another area gives a different interpretation. Unambiguous. So this is one of the items about a charter that I am pretty insistent on, that it be comprehensive so it covers everything it needs to cover as far as your basic structure and function, but you should not load the charter up with a lot of details. In other words, the day-to-day operations of a city should not be included in the charter. Those kinds of things can be established in policies, procedures, a local law, an ordinance, something that can be changed more easily than changing a charter, and that's needed to adapt to the whatever the issues of the day are. The charter is not going to be changed that often, and it's not easy to change a charter. As I explained to you, citizens ultimately are the only ones who can change the charter. So you don't want to put in something that might be very relevant today, but in 10 years, that's going to be obsolete. That kind of an issue could be addressed by an ordinance, by a policy, by a procedure. Now, we have a really good example in the state of Florida about not doing what I've just alluded to up there. So the federal constitution has been in existence since the 1780s, right? We all are, we hope, somewhat knowledgeable about our federal constitution. Anyone know how many amendments to that constitution in more than 200 years? You're close, 27. There was a 28th one that never got through, which was the Equal Rights Amendment. But 27 actually have been adopted by the citizens of the United States in over 200 years. Now, if I asked you how many amendments to the Florida Constitution there have been, I don't know that I even know the answer, but it's well over 200. And that document has only been in existence, the current one, since 1968. And if you are a voter, you probably remember almost every time you go to a general election, there's a list of constitutional amendments on the ballot that usually the legislature has put on there, or currently there's a Constitution Revision Commission that meets every 20 years, and they're going to probably put some amendments on the ballot. So what has happened to the Florida Constitution, it has been loaded up with all kinds of details that have nothing to do with the structure and function of the state of Florida. And the best example that I've shared with some of you before, if you've been in Florida for a little bit of time, you might remember there was an amendment that we voted on that had to do with pregnant pigs. And it's probably an important issue for the people who raise pigs. And it had to do with the size of the cages that you could put pregnant pigs in and not allowing some practices that were inhumane. That does not belong in the Florida Constitution. It has nothing to do with the structure and function of our state government, yet it's an example of the kind of thing that somehow has crept into that document. So it's a challenge, I think, for all of us to understand and live with that. City charters don't need to be like that. City charters, like the federal constitution, can be clean, simple, and not address those kinds of details that do not relate to structure and function. One of the things you do want to do when you have a charter is you've elected a city council to make a lot of decisions about your city. Hopefully they are people, well, at the time they got elected, I'm sure you felt they represented you because that's why you voted for them. So you want to leave some discretion to those elected officials to make decisions. We couldn't have all citizens weigh in on every decision. We'd never make any decisions at that point. So a charter should not tie the hands of the local elected officials, not allowing them to make some of those decisions that need to be made in a timely fashion. So if you try to put in some restrictions that say you can't do this unless you go to a vote of the citizens, and there are some things that you can't do without going to a vote of the citizens, but if you put too many of those in the charter, you might miss some wonderful opportunities because it takes a long time to set up an election, and it costs money to have an election, and the issue may have bypassed your city by the time you got around to that. So you want to give some discretion and flexibility to your elected officials. And again, the charter should be fairly short, which yours is, and except for one section that we'll talk about tonight, and it should be readable, understandable. Okay. As I talked about before, with the federal and state constitution, your city charter cannot be in conflict. So if there's something in the federal constitution or the state constitution that says you have to do it this way or you cannot do that, the city cannot put in a provision that says, well, in Palm Coast you can do it. That would be found unconstitutional. It would be challenged in a court of law. And so you have to be very careful that you don't conflict with those other documents. But you can put a more stringent or a stricter requirement. So the state may say, you know, you have to have a minimum of whatever. Palm Coast could have a higher minimum. They couldn't have something lower than what the state says, but you could have something that was a little more stringent. And if there is a conflict, the higher level of government takes precedence. So if it went to court, it would be found in favor of the state of Florida or the U.S. Constitution rather than your charter. So you try not to have any of those kinds of conflicts in your charter and not put yourself in that kind of a situation. The city, however, does need to be in compliance with the charter. So you have two documents that are really key to the functioning of the city. One is the comprehensive plan, and the other is the city charter. Both of those have the force of law, and the city is supposed to abide by whatever is in the charter and whatever is in the comprehensive plan. And I said before, the charter can only be changed by a vote of the electorate. So, with that said, let me first ask if there's any questions about charters in general, because I'm not going to go into the Palm Coast charter until we open this up for public comment, and then we'll start looking specifically at your charter. But any questions about charters? Yes, sir. And I'm going to ask you to speak into the microphone because this is being recorded, and when you're not in the microphone, it doesn't come out.
George Meagan, District 2. What about the review? What does the state law say about the review and the charter?
The state law is actually silent on that. It's up to cities to determine when and how they will review their charters. There is a state law that allows the charter to be reviewed. I mean, it says the city council at any time can present changes to the charter. Just at a regular council meeting, they could adopt an ordinance, have two public hearings on it, and put it on the ballot. So the council always has leeway under state law to do that. But cities can establish charter committees if they want to, and that can be at their discretion. I will tell you, and I think I shared this last time, I'm now assisting the city of Tampa with their charter review. They haven't reviewed it since 1975. That's a big city to not look at their charter. They've made a few changes here and there that their council put on the ballot, but they've not done a wholesale review, and they're not required to by state. Other questions just about charters in general?
What does the charter say about the review process?
Your current charter gives you the leeway of doing it with a commission or having the council do it. We addressed this at the last meeting, and when we come back to the public comments at the end, I'll be happy to talk about that. And it is something that will be on the agenda at the next meeting because that's the section that we'll be going into. So, you know, I'd really like to defer that discussion till then. But I will tell you that your charter is a little confusing, and it's certainly something that needs to be addressed in this review. Okay, question over here.
George Madison. You said the charter can only change by the electorate, the majority of voters. Is that the majority of the eligible voters or the majority of the people who voted at that election?
It's as in all elections, the majority of the people who show up and either do a absentee ballot, they're not really absentee ballots anymore, ballot by mail, or come to the voting booth. So there's no way we could try to figure out why all those folks don't show up, but whoever shows up, the majority of them voting for something, it'll pass, voting against it, it'll fail. Anything else? All right, okay, another question, and then we're going to open up for public comment on your ideas about things that you see in the charter that you'd like to address.
Yeah, Ralph Lightfoot, District 2. I need to have something cleared up. I know you talked about this before. Is the process that we're doing now, that you're currently conducting now, is that the proper process to use?
Before I got involved in this, your city attorney, who I think will be here in a little bit, and he can address it again, advised your council that this was the process they should use. It is a legal process, and they are following it. Having these public workshops is a little unusual because not every city makes this big an effort to get citizen input and citizen participation. So, but that's totally at the discretion of how you want to design your process. Many of the cities just, have a few meetings and make the decisions. And, of course, they're all public meetings, and they're open to the public, and the public's allowed to comment. But this effort to go to four different parts of the city and to make it accessible, is a little unusual. But it's all, as far as I know, legal. And by the way, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to give a legal opinion on any of these issues.
Just one correction. Steve Nobile, City Councilman, District 4. Just one correction. He didn't advise us to this way. He advised us that this process was legal. He didn't tell us this is how you do it. So just wanted to clear that.
Thank you for that, because as I said, I was not involved at the time the decision was made to go this route. Okay. Another question is just about charters in general. The city attorney, Mr. Reichman, the city attorney, who does give legal advice to. Okay, so at this point, I'd like to open it to public comment on any part of the charter. It doesn't have to be the sections we're dealing with now. Anything that you have some concerns, and if I think you need to identify yourself for the record. Thanks.
Yes, Vincent Liguori, District 2. I have three separate proposals for the revision of the charter. The first deals with the qualifications for office. At present, I believe the charter states that you must be a resident of the district at the time you qualify. I would like to see that changed to city council candidates must have lived in the city for a one-year period. That would be under Section 5 qualifications for office, paragraph B3. That at the time of qualification, each candidate for a seat on the council shall have resided within the boundaries of the district he or she hopes seeks to run from for a period of 1 year. Why am I saying that? In the past and since incorporation, there have been many maneuvers to qualify. P.O. boxes, living with mom, etc. And I know that a person living in a district for a period of a year is far more superior in knowledge than a person just coming in off the street. My second proposal regarding is Section 6, Charter Officers, Paragraph 2C, Power and Duties. Include the following, that council, based upon a majority vote, has the ability to direct the city manager to remove someone from a city post. My reason for saying that is you can look at Congress and the Senate today, and it's apparent. But we have that malfeasance clause that Mr. Nobile, seeing someone doing something, a city employee doing something, a three-hour lunch, if he says anything to that employee, he's committing malfeasance. So I believe that the city council, by a majority vote, should have the right to direct the city manager to, whether did I say, to remove someone from a sitting post, of course, with just qualifications. My last one is for Charter Officers, Section C, Power and Duties. Having attended many city council meetings, I've heard council members say that they were not aware of certain expenses being incurred by whomever in the city. So what I propose is that all expenses not included in the annual budget or capital program must be approved prior to purchase by the council. The dollar amount shall be determined by the council. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Other comments on charter issues? Yes, sir.
Yes, George Mayo, Palm Coast. I saw in the paper that past couple meetings were sparsely attended. I come tonight and it's sparsely attended out of the population of 80,000. It seems to me everybody may have good ideas about what they want to propose to do to the charter, but is this going to be one or two, three, four, or five people making their advisements, and that's about it? You know, you kept hearing about all these people on charter review, all these people on charter review, and I come here for the first time, and there's like two dozen people. One of the other things that was mentioned, I guess, talked about in previous meetings, since I'm here the first time, was a quorum, and it seemed like there might be a problem with us having the mayor and four council members, total of five, and a quorum being three. I don't see anything wrong with that. It seemed like there might be someone wanting to make a change to have it more, whether it be four or a total of five. At that point, if you just leave it as a quorum, that fulfills the need to have a meeting. If for some reason one of the council members, the mayor, didn't like what was on the agenda that night and wanted to subvert the process and say, if I don't show up, then they can't have a quorum, then we aren't going to pass this and we'll have to table it. and then we'll go down the line. I think we even quorum as is would be fine. And how is it that, what will be the criteria for you to recommend to the city council on what the changes that you think should be put into the charter? Everybody can come in here and put in their 2 cents, including me. What is it, how is it you determine, yeah, that's feasible, that's not so feasible. What is the criteria that you would say recommends to them? And then is it the city council that chooses what they want to get on the ballot?
Great comments. Let me respond to a couple of them. First of all, you're right. I mean, actually, this turnout is better than I see in any other city I've been doing this work, and I've been doing this work for about 35 years. The problem is that people don't get very excited about charters. They think that's kind of dull and boring. I mean, who's interested in structure and function of government? You all are, obviously, and you understand how important that is. But I've worked in cities where there's really big contentious issues, and we set up charter review process, and we had a big room like this set up, and 3 people came, and the next meeting 2 people came, and then they went to a smaller room because nobody was showing up. And that's been my experience. It's just hard to get people motivated. What this city has done, in addition to having the 4 public workshops, which people, and maybe Bo can let us know if anyone much has availed themselves, they have a website where you can enter comments, suggestions. If you can't come to public meetings, don't want to come to the public meeting. And Bo, are we having much input through that? A handful. So that's up there, and anybody at any time can add comments and information to that. So I think the city's trying. It's just not unusual at all, that it's not masses of people coming to these kinds of meetings. As far as recommendations for what the council should consider, I have gone through the charter and I've identified areas where there was either conflict within the charter was in conflict with state law, there were things that were not in the charter at all, that were not clear. So I'm just listing those for the council to consider. I'm totally neutral in this process. I don't care. I do care because I want you to have a good charter. But I don't care if the council picks this one or that one. I'm not going to say, you've got to have this and that needs to be in your charter. That's totally up to the council. So they will have my input, as well as the input of all the people who participated, as well as their own ideas of what should or shouldn't be in the charter. And ultimately, they'll make that decision. They'll have more public input, I'm sure, at subsequent meetings. So, this process is not real long, but it's long enough to generate public opinion and influence over the council.
George Megan, District 2. Where in the charter or the state law does it say the council does review?
I have to pull out the statute, but there is a state statute that allows the process for charter review and charter amendment and does allow council to make amendments to the charter. So I think that's the section that the attorney referenced for them.
Ralph Lightfoot, District 2. My concern is the growth of Palm Coast. And it was so difficult getting this first charter review done that I want to make sure that we take into consideration the growth. And will this charter lead us to that path? And the other question is, where does the comprehensive plan fit in with the charter?
Since we're getting some questions as well as comments, I'll respond. As far as the comprehensive plan, it's a totally separate document. It is required by law, and the city does need to abide by it. You want to make sure that your charter and your comp plan are not in conflict. That would be a problem for a city. So I would hope that as we go through this process, city staff who are knowledgeable about your comp plan is much more detailed than the charter. So it's really dealing with your zoning and all of those kinds of conditions, which you would really don't want to put in the charter. There are some cities that have some things in their charter that are also in their comprehensive plan regarding densities and height limits and things like that. You currently don't have those in your charter. You probably have them in your comp plan, but the documents need to be consistent and not in conflict.
Kim Medley, District 2. I'm going to start with that last bullet. It says charter can only be changed by a vote of the electorate. The current process that's been adopted by City Council, I'm going to argue, changes Section 10, subparagraph 2, A and B of our current charter. That's where the charter review process is spelled out in fifth grade English. Six sentences that I completely understand. The current process, according to our charter right now, actions taken by City Council, it says all actions of the City Council shall be by ordinance, resolution, or motion. That's in Section 5, Subsection 8, Paragraph B. And when I asked how this got passed, I did a public records request. It was done through a consensus of the council at a workshop, not a City Council meeting. And according to the statute that you keep referring to, as our attorney does, yes, City Council can make changes to the charter through an ordinance. And that proposed amendment is put to the voters for the voters to decide upon. And we did that with our elections in 2011. There's an ordinance. I have a table here of all the ordinances that have changed our charter. That went through the right process. This hasn't. Our charter was changed without a vote by the electorate. We are now going through this process, and we're encouraging people to offer up suggestions, which I contend could be subject to legal challenge. The city attorney gave a 5-slide PowerPoint presentation, one of which is the title slide. Now, what city council can do through ordinance is one thing. What the electorate can do through the petition is another thing. But the charter review, the word shall is used throughout that entire section, and it's done so for a reason, so that the citizens are guaranteed their opportunity to do their charter review committee. And that's not what's happening. It's just not. The city manager also has a specific duty to see that the provisions of the charter are executed. The provisions of the charter are not being executed. So, I went on the city's website today. There are 2 suggestions so far that have been submitted, maybe more, but I checked this morning. There are 2, and I printed them out. And I have written letters to the editors. Flagler Live did a fantastic job. The News Journal did a letter to the editor, allowed me to print that. Nothing from the Palm Coast Observer, though. So there are real questions. And by the time you get to Section 10 of our charter, which is at the next meeting, you are running up against the deadline of November 6, 2017, because our charter says the Charter Review Committee is to be appointed 1 year before the next general election. So I am going to renew my concerns and my... I'm telling you, this process is not right.
John Brady, District 1. I agree wholeheartedly. Section 10 of the City Charter, Section 2, Paragraph B, uses the word shall. Now, shall may be thought of as something different if all through the document shall is used. It is thought that maybe the people who put it together didn't understand the difference between shall and may. But clearly they did, because they said the charter may be review after 10 years. So clearly when that document was written, the intent of the people who wrote the charter was that a citizens committee of 5 people, one selected by each member of the council, be set to look at the charter. That was clearly not done. And somebody asked for the Florida statute. It is Florida statute 166.031, paragraph 3. And in that section, it says, in part, a municipality may amend its charter pursuant to this section, notwithstanding charter provisions to the contrary. And I agree, this process is flawed, and this process is wrong, and Attorney Reisman was wrong. And it's not unusual for attorneys to be wrong. It's very clear. What is the difference between shall and may? Everybody in this room knows it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
George Megan. So at this point in time, you're proceeding with an illegal process. He's just stipulated what? And since Bill isn't here, probably because he knew this was going to come up, there is a lawyer sitting here that's a council member. I'd like his opinion, if he would.
This is really public comment time, so I'm not going to put the council member on the spot. And I told you I'm not an attorney, so I don't feel I have the expertise. This process, from the city attorney's opinion, is appropriate, and so we are proceeding with it. And he arrives for the when we're getting to the end public comment. I'll certainly have him address it again. So other public comment.
My name is Al Terrells. I see, like the man over there said about not being many members here, it appears that apparently there hasn't really been a lot of advertisement until that you can know what's going on. Another question is the opportunity for the members or the citizens to have a copy of the charter so when they come to the meetings, they know what's going on. Has that been something they've been working on also?
Is the charter available on the website? Charter's available on the city website.
Okay, that may be true, but what about the people who don't have internet? Everything appears and everybody has internet and other kinds of things. There are many citizens that don't have these things. So what kinds of resources do they do for those people?
I would assume if someone requests a copy to be sent to them that the city staff will do that. So anyone who doesn't have access could just call the city clerk's office and they'll have one mailed to them. Okay, any other comments? All right, then let's talk about the Palm Coast Charter, which, as some of you know, was adopted when the city was incorporated in 1999. It was part of a process. When you become a city, the state law requires you to write a charter. So at that time, there was a group of citizens who were wanting to Palm Coast to become a city. They wrote the charter. And there has not been a comprehensive review of the charter since that time, is my understanding.
Vincent Liguori, Palm Coast. As a member of the Home Rule, which fought for incorporation, we did not write the charter. The county commissioners supplied the funds to do the charter, and it was performed by a Mrs. Lois Westcott.
Okay, that's interesting, because I've worked with cities on incorporations, and I always form a citizens committee to write the charter, so I misstated that I thought that process had occurred at that time. So, okay. It's great to have someone here who was here at the beginning. Wonderful. Okay. But there has not been a comprehensive review. And as was mentioned earlier, there was written in there that the city could at 10 years do that, and I guess they selected not to. But the city did approve in some manner conducting this charter review by the council now and at the not recommendation, but at the their council giving them that it was a correct way to do it. So tonight we are going to be looking at sections 8 and 9 Section 8 deals with elections, and in that there are sections dealing with who's an elector, nonpartisan, qualifying, schedule of elections, determination, and canvassing board. And Section 9 deals with a land description. It's the boundaries of your city, and it also deals with council districts. So I'm going to make a few comments now about issues for consideration, and these are things that I've seen in the charter that I think the council might want to address. So let me give you a basic statement. In many city charters, they have a very simple section on elections, and it pretty much says you follow the Florida election laws, because you have to follow the Florida election laws, and it states the statute, which is Chapter 100, which lays out in quite a bit of detail how you conduct elections and municipal elections, statewide elections. So many charters at that time just include a statement, and that takes care of how they deal with elections. Yours has some different aspects to it, and the areas that I identified as something you might want to consider was something that a gentleman here brought up, which was residency in the city. And this is not addressed in your election section, nor is it addressed in the qualifying. So the qualifying, which was back in the earlier section, doesn't address how long you have to live in the city. So in effect, somebody could move to Palm Coast tomorrow. They could go to the supervisor of elections and register to vote, and then they could say, I'm running for city council. And they may have come from Ohio or Pennsylvania and not have a clue to what life is like in Palm Coast. So a lot of cities put a requirement into their charter, you should have lived here 6 months. You should have lived here for a year immediately prior to qualifying. So that's not an unusual component in most charters. Your charter is silent on it, which means there's no residency requirement. So, you know, that's something that could be addressed by your council if they think that's an important thing, and if citizens weigh in, as someone has tonight. And it would be put in both sections, because qualifying is in the election section, and then it also would be the qualifications in the earlier part. Again, that's an option that they might want to look at. If you go longer than a year, you're probably going to get in trouble with some constitutional, federal constitution issues to prohibit somebody, you know, giving that long a time would not be considered appropriate. So there's some language in your charter that talks about the way you qualify for running for office, and you have some alternatives. You can pay fees or you can have a petition, and they're not in line with what is in the Florida statutes for elections. So in Palm Coast, you need to pay 10% of your salary, of the salary of a city commissioner, to run. Or you can have a petition signed, and it says by 1% of the population of since the last census, of the district since the last census. So Florida law calls for 3% of the salary rather than 10%, which you all have. And the petition, they have the same 1%, but they say that it's the number of electors, people voting in the last election, not the census. So right now we're in 2017. The census was in 2010. My guess is your population has grown in the last 7 years, and so perhaps the number of signatures on a petition should reflect not something that was 10 years ago, but something that was the last election, how many people were registered to vote at that time in that district. And so that's something that might need to be addressed. The other thing is there's something called an election assessment. Now, the clerk tells me she collects this, but it's not in your charter. And you have to do it because it's in state law, but it should probably be in your charter. There's also a 1% of the salary that the state says you would collect for all of these people running for office that goes to the Florida Elections Commission. So while Palm Coast is doing it, your charter doesn't reference that, and it would be good information to have in the charter. If you can't afford that, you can have a certificate of hardship and submit that. So it's not trying to prohibit people who aren't well from running for these offices, because you can do the petition instead of paying the percent of the salary. And for this election assessment, you can qualify by declaring that you it's a financial hardship, or you wouldn't have to do it. But barring that, you should be paying those fees, and you are, but it's not in your charter. Another area that I saw that was a little unusual was for the special election of the mayor, and that has to do with if there's a vacancy in the office of the mayor. So your charter calls for a special election if there's a vacancy, and it doesn't say anything about, well, what if the mayor only has 6 months left in the term? You still have to have a special election in your charter. Whereas your council members, if there's a vacancy and there's less than half of their term remaining, someone is appointed and fills that seat until the next regular election. If there's more than 2 years in the term of that council member, then you have a special election, because somebody's going to be serving maybe three, almost 4 years. If somebody had a tragedy happen 2 months after they got elected, you might not want an appointed person in that position for almost 4 years. So the council is addressed in that way. But the mayor, that vacancy, apparently, regardless of the time left in the term, you would have to hold a special election. So what is the special election all about? That means an election that's not in sync with the general elections that every 2 years the supervisor sets up and you all vote on state and federal officers as well as the local. So if the city sets up a special election, the city has to pay for it. And for a city this size, it's not a small amount of money that comes out of your budget for a special election. I know there are cities who have this, the provision for special elections has caused them, I was working with a very small town, and because their charter wasn't very good in the way it said it, they had to have three special elections within about 4 months, and that really blew their budget, I will tell you. But the charter required that. Now their charter has been changed, and they no longer will have to do that. So that might be something that that your council wants to address, the amount of time remaining in the term and basing whether an appointment or a special election is required. If someone only has 6 months left and it's vacant, somebody could be appointed for 6 months and then there's an election. Why would you want to have a special election and then you'd have to have an election again 6 months later? Something to think about. The City Canvassing Board, and I'm not sure, I haven't asked Virginia how you do that in your charter. It just requires two people to be on the City Canvassing Board. The Canvassing Board is the board that looks at the election results, and if there were some questionable ballots, because people sometimes ballots, as we all remember, if you were here when the chads were, when we used to have the punch holes, and there were lots of questions about whether that was a legal ballot, and things like signatures not matching, and whether this should be thrown out or should be counted. So you have a local committee that does that. The clerk is one of the people on that committee, which is usual and normal. But in most cities, they'll have three people on a canvassing board, so that if two agree, if you have two and one agrees and one doesn't agree, what do you do with that? So it would be normal to have three people, and there should also be a provision, I think, that nobody whose name is on the ballot should be on the canvassing board. And that's not in your charter currently. It just says that one representative from the city designated by the council. So it doesn't say. So it could be somebody who's running could be on. I don't know that the council would make a designation of someone, but it's not prohibited in your charter. So that's something that could be looked at. And that's what I'm talking about, the membership of who would serve on the campus board. So this land description is the big part of Section 9, and this is the boundaries of your city. And this was definitely something that had to be established in order for you to become a city. And so if you look at your charter, see this? When I talked about your charter, is really pretty small, except for the 47 pages that currently describe the boundaries of your city. And it describes it in a way, and some of you may be in real estate or may be appraisers, so this may make sense to you, but I'll just give you an example. From a point of reference being the northeast corner of the Platte Lakeview Section 37, Map Book 13, pages 1 through 29 of the Public Records of Blackhawk County, thence departing said Platte Section 37, north 64 degrees, 44 feet, 58 inches east for a distance of 150 feet to a point on this. Anyway, this is, for me, I don't know where this is or what this is. Those descriptions, it's a legal description of land that encompasses the city. You can't, no, you can change your boundaries by annexing property, and you can do that according to state law. So what most cities have done now for their charters, because they all used to have these meets and bounds, or what these are called, they used to all have these in their charter. Now they put a simple statement near the beginning of the charter, this is way back near the end, that just says the boundaries of the city are as they exist at the current time, and the city may amend the boundaries according to state law, and that the description of the boundaries is available at City Hall or on the website or both, and you just put that simple paragraph in and you take 47 pages out of your charter that currently, or I would guess most people, are meaningless 47 pages. So this is not a big issue. This is not a big deal. It's just something to streamline your charter to make it a little more readable and accessible to the public. Would be just eliminating those pages and substituting a simple paragraph. What you need to know is that does in no way change the boundaries of the city. They remain exactly as they are described in this legal document, and the city has the ability, as state law gives them, to change those boundaries from time to time by annexing. And then you don't need to change your charter because you just change this description that would be available at City. So, delete what's, it's almost 48 pages actually, because 48 pages, and then there's just districts after that. So the council districts are the rest of the chapter, which isn't much, and I will tell you, after I got here tonight, I realized I hadn't looked ahead far enough. What it currently says in this section is just that there shall be four districts for the city, which there are. Those are for your four council members, that they are geographically located in the four, I guess it's quadrants. The city is pretty much divided up into four sections based on population. In this section, I would have expected to see this, and I now find it is in your charter. I don't think it's in the right place because it should be where it talks about districts. It's in the next section, and we can, you know, certainly look at it then. I think it's probably a pretty good process that you have. It does set up a committee to do the redistricting, and my understanding is it was done a little late the last time. What you're supposed to do is after every census, every 10 years, you're supposed to redistrict, and you're supposed to do it pretty quickly so that it's ready in time for the next election, well in advance of the next election. So if someone's wanting to run, they need to know what district they live in so that they can run from that district. So it needs to be done in a timely fashion, and a citizens committee is appointed in your city to take care of doing that. just to make sure that you maintain the equal number of people in each of the four districts, so you don't end up with one district having way more people than another district, yet only having one council member represent them. So that council member might represent 20,000 people, and in another district they're representing 35,000 people. So that's not equal representation. So that's why you do the redistricting. And there are some specific definitions set up for the criteria for the districting plan, and we'll examine those at the next meeting to make sure they're adequate. But it generally is trying to avoid what doesn't happen at the state level, gerrymandering, and trying to push all the voters of whatever opinion into a district so that it's favorable to one council member or another, or one individual or another. So while I think what you have is probably adequate, I think it's probably in the wrong place, and so it might need to be moved into this section. But again, as long as you have it in the charter, it's probably okay. So those are the points in those two sections that I have seen. So what I'd like to do first is open up for questions on anything in sections 8 or 9, any of the things that I talked about that you have questions about, don't understand, need clarification, and then we'll open again for public comment on the whole charter. So anything I can help you with.
Ralph Lightfoot, District 2. Is there a way in the charter where we can put a provision where the local supervisor of election will be responsible for all elections and budget accordingly?
Virginia, what relationship do you have with the current?
We enter into interlocal agreements approved by council with the supervisor of elections to conduct the elections. It's typical in our charter that I'm the qualifying officer.
So the way it works now is the supervisor runs the election, but Virginia, your city clerk, people qualify with her the paperwork. And that's according to state law. So you weren't, I guess I misunderstood.
No. What I'm saying is to have the supervisor of election to conduct the whole process. Okay, responsible for gathering petitions and all of that stuff and take that out of the hands of the city. Because when a candidate runs for office in the city, the way they have to do that reports is in the dark ages. The SOE has a sophisticated data processing database thing that we don't use, that we should be using.
So state statute requires the municipal officer to do the qualifying, supervisor to run the election. Actually, the supervisors are qualifying state and county officials. I don't know that they want to do the city ones too. Probably they might not be willing to enter into the agreement. I think you're doing it according to state law. You have to do it.
As somebody who has run for city office in the state of Florida, I understand what the gentleman said, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, because what happens in practice is, as a city candidate, you are excluded from the ease of submitting your reports online. You are like in a technical backwater. And so I sympathize with the gentleman, and I hope at some point in the future the situation will no longer exist.
Okay. I was going to say, it sounds like this would be a good recommendation to give to your local legislative delegation to make that kind of change in the state election laws, which I imagine the city would welcome. Other questions about any of the issues that I raised or anything else on the charter, and then we'll go back to public comment.
I have one. Kim Medley, District 2. You talked about that this one section should be in Section 9 with regards to the districting commission, and I agree with you. And I guess what I'm going to ask is, it says that the city council shall appoint 5 city electors to form this commission. So is there a statute loophole that's going to be used when a districting commission is supposed to be formed, and we have a hybrid process that's adopted without ordinance or put to the voters?
Actually, I think your charter does speak to that, because that citizens committee submits their report to the council. If the council fails to adopt an ordinance that would create, you know, their recommendations, it goes onto the ballot without the council's approval, is what it says. Yeah. So there's a fail-safe if they...
You are referring to Section 10, and you rightly indicate that this subsection 4, which is regarding districts and districting commissions and adjusting the number of districts, should be in Section 9. I agree with that. And it specifically says that the city council shall appoint 5 city electors. And in that same section, subparagraph or subsection 2, it says the charter shall be reviewed no sooner than 10 years, which we're certainly there. And a 5-member charter review committee shall be appointed. And that's not what's happening. We have a hybrid process that's been adopted without ordinance. That's not even in alignment with the Florida statute. So when we get to a redistricting commission, what's the guarantee that citizens are going to be involved in that, too?
Well, the city attorney has arrived, and so I'm going to defer to him to respond to that question.
First of all, I think it's important to recognize that Section 10 is titled that general provision, and it provides for process for charter amendment, and also provides for the districting, which are two different processes, so they're not the same as far as what the different options are. I understand that before I got here, and I apologize, I was at the field in Abitzman, which is your planning commission, so I just got to make that clear. We talked about this before, and Section 10 has to be read in its entirety to understand how it works together. So let's dig in. It says right away, right out of the get-go, that the end, the Section 1 and Section 2, Section 1 says that charter amendment, which is, that's the end of the process. That's where you get to. That's what the voters are going to ultimately decide if there's something that's put on for the election in November of 2018, is whether or not to amend the charter. I think the issue, the dispute that I'm understanding, is how you get to that. What are the vehicles? What are the means that are available to get to that point where the voters get to vote on a ballot in November of 2018? And people are arguing that it has to be by charter review. And I cannot tell you that is the way you can read. That is not an appropriate way to read Section 10 for the following reasons. First of all, it says that charter review schedule, this is Section 10, subsection 2, and we use these verbs shall and may. The word shall in schedule says that it shall be reviewed no sooner than 10 years. That's where the shall comes in. So that means that from the 1999 to 2009, the original incorporators of the city said, we're not going to do a charter review for that first 10 years. We can't do a charter review for the first 10 years. But after that, it may be reviewed every 10 years. And if you're going to use that process, that vehicle, after the 10 years from 2009 on, you want to do a charter review, and you can appoint, you shall appoint 5 members. It's a charter review committee. And at the end of that process, there's going to be some proposals that are being sent back to the city council. We're going to pass an ordinance, and it's going to go to the voters in November of 2018. And at the end of the day, the voters will decide whether or not to amend the charter that was adopted in 1999. So if we interpret Section 2 to override everything else in Section 10, then what that does, it means that the folks that created our charter put language in Section 1 that they didn't mean to put in Section 1. Renders it meaningless. I'd like to finish, if I could, please. I mean, I know you're not going to agree with what I have to say, but it's my opinion, and I think it's very well thought out. So let me just finish. So Section 1 says charter amendment, which is what we're here doing. We're talking about whether the charter needs to be amended. And it says, this is the very first section, in the very first sentence, the very first words in Section 10. It says the charter may be amended in accordance with Chapter 160, which is the Home Rules Power Act, for the statutes. So the originators of our city said that that you have to look at Chapter 166 as one of the vehicles that is available to amend your charter. 166 says, the governing body of a municipality may submit to the electors of said municipality a proposed amendment to its charter. And that's what your city council chose to do. They are allowing the public through these 4, as I understand the discussion that was had at a workshop, they chose this option as one of the 3 options. It's not a hybrid. It's one of the legal options to allow the citizens to give them input so that they can come back at a series of public meetings and decide whether they want to adopt an ordinance, direct staff and my office to prepare an ordinance to place on a referendum, place on an election in November of 2018, amendments. So the process that we're doing not here is not a charter review committee. At no time, and I want to make this really clear, at no time did the council appoint itself as a charter review committee. That's not what these 4 workshops are. This is not a charter review committee process. These are 4 workshops to allow the public to have input, help the council understand what it is that people have been clamoring about for a while, that they think that there's something wrong with the charter. And when these workshops are done, the input is going to be accumulated and is going to be presented back to the council with the assistance of our facilitator so that they can have public meetings to discuss and decide whether they want to submit to the voters an amendment. And I was asked, well, if someone disagrees with this process, what can they do? So there's a couple options. One is in Chapter 166, and it's in the same sentence, which creates the option to do what we're doing. Because in 166 it says that there can be petitions submitted by the voters, 10% of the last elector, the last election, and it goes right around the city council, and it can be submitted to the voters. But that that was in the 3 options that was presented to the city council at its original workshop. Charter review committee was option number 2, and option number 3 is what they chose, which is to get input and to decide whether or not they want to amend the charter. So if at the end of this discussion you disagree with me, I certainly respect that, and I'm not telling you that the language in Section 10 is the way that I would have worded it if I was on the Charter Commission in 1999. But I'm doing my very best to read the charter so that it reads, so that all of it is rendered meaningful. And I will tell you that when a court reviews legislation or a charter or an ordinance, and there is an argument that it is internally inconsistent, or there is an ambiguity about what it means, that there's differences between the different sections, courts will always try to interpret a laws, a statute or a code or a charter, so that it can give meaning to all of the sections as best they can. And it is my opinion that if that the argument that there has to be a charter review committee essentially renders section 10.1 meaningless. And that would be inconsistent with this fundamental rule of legislative interpretation. So, you know, do you go to the Attorney General to get a second opinion? Well, the Attorney General's website says in its very face that it is reluctant to and rarely gives opinions on interpretations of charters. Ms. Kimball, you referenced an Attorney General opinion at one of our earlier workshops. That Attorney General opinion was not interpreting a charter. So the Attorney General has said on her website, this is not what I do. And to make the request for an opinion, it has to come, and it also says on that webpage, that to make a request for an Attorney General opinion, it has to come from the governing body. So I can't ask for it, one council member can't ask for it, it has to come from the governing body. Now I was asked, well, what else can you do? Well, there's the possibility, and I was interpreted in some fashion saying, well, sue me. That's not what I said. What I said is that there is a process in the Florida statutes for what's called an action for declaratory relief. And it's when someone has a dispute with someone else over a legal matter or a factual issue or the combination thereof. I'm not saying that a court would take on this. I was simply asking, trying to give a direct answer to a direct question. What could someone do, because it was asked of the council at that earlier workshop, what could someone do if they disagreed with my opinion? And I gave that as the only thing that I could think of, recognizing that the Attorney General has said on her own website that she is not, generally speaking, she doesn't give opinions on interpretation of charters. So, bottom line is this. For me to have previously opined that the only way we could go about what we're doing as a charter review committee would have rendered a substantial portion of your existing charter meaningless. And I think that would have been the inappropriate way to handle this. That would have been the inappropriate conclusion to reach and would have subjected to the city council to a better challenge that they were not following their charter.
Well, I think we're in a question period, so let's finish the question period and then we'll open it for public comment, and then you could comment at that time. And you know, one of the reasons for doing charter review, however you do it, is to clean up this kind of stuff so that there won't be misinterpretations 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now. So, you know, obviously there's some ambiguity here. And at the meeting next week, you know, we'll be looking at sections 10 and 11. So, you know, this conversation will continue, I'm sure, at that time. So let me just ask again if there's any questions. Sure.
If you want to delete an item, like this boundaries, do you have to go on the, do you have to be voted on? Just one. And if another question is, if you want to change the section, do you have to put that whole section in when you on the ballot so that people can read that?
Okay, so two questions. First of all, do you put the whole section on? When you put a question on a ballot, a charter amendment, you are prohibited from the state you're limited by the state to a certain number of words. So you can only put 75 words the ballot question, and they should be crafted so they're easy to understand. You know, sometimes people try to pull a fast one, and they'll write it in a way that if you vote yes, it means no, and if you vote no, it means yes. So I would hope that in anything that's put on the ballot for you, it would be very clear yes means yes and no means no, but you are prohibited from having more than 75 words, so it wouldn't be possible in some of these to include the whole language, but it should say this what the change would be, and certainly in information that's given to the public prior to an election, I would hope that there would be good explanations, the reason why this is recommended, why it's on the ballot, what the change would mean. Now, as far as if you're deleting a section, my understanding is, and Mr. Reichman, correct me if I'm wrong, that there are very few things you can do without the citizens voting on. So there are a few things, like if you need to change the date of an election, because sometimes the state changes a primary election and then the local governments have to change their dates, you can do that without going to a vote of the citizens. But any substantive change, so deleting a section, would need to be voted on by the citizens. If you're referring to the boundaries, while you are deleting pages and pages of the description, you're not deleting the boundaries of the city. But my understanding is it still would need to be on the ballot as an amendment. Any other questions?
Given that a charter amendment is approved and voted upon by the electorate and passed, when does it go into effect?
So in the ordinance that is written that puts these on the ballots, you would usually have an effective date. And in my experience, it's pretty much when the election is certified, this goes into effect. So this is not something that, you know, 2 years from now or 4 years, it would take effect pretty quickly.
That would be the effective date. That would be the when it would, you know, make the changes substantive.
Okay, any other questions? And then we'll go back to public comment.
Terry McClellan, District 2. I'm not trying to be redundant, but I'm trying to be clear about something. There seems to be a lot of ambiguity. Reading from number 2B, each district council member shall appoint one member from his or her district, and the mayor shall appoint one member at large. That forms a 5-member charter review committee. And the next sentence says, the Palm Coast City Council shall fund this committee. So I have 3 questions. Do we have a review committee? Who are they? And are they funded?
Yeah, my understanding is there is not a charter review committee. Therefore, they have not been funded, and therefore, I can't tell you who's on it because there isn't one. So that's my understanding. Well, going back to, I think it, the confusion is, and I'm going to be very honest with you, when I first was approached by the city, of course the first thing I did was look at your charter and read it, and I was very confused by those 2 paragraphs, and I said, this needs to be changed. If there's nothing else that you change, you need to clear this up and make it how you're going to proceed in the future. It's unfortunate we're at this point where the confusion is still here. I don't know that you can say anything more than what you've already said about the shall and may. They're using a legal process according to the attorney, and that's where we are now.
This process that we're doing right now is not the process that's set forth in the Charter Section 10.2. This is not a charter review committee. Right. Right. If you are going to appoint and create, if the council were to choose to appoint a charter review committee as the mechanism, as the tool to review the charter, then that is the, it's very specific about the what the process has to be. If that vehicle, if that tool is selected by the city council, and it has been and continues to be my opinion, that is not the exclusive tool. It is an option. It is not an option that the city council chose to follow. We are following the option that is set forth in section 10.1 and specifically referenced in chapter 166. And I wanted to read one more thing. This is from an attorney general opinion. This is from Charlie Crisp, who is the attorney general. It says, section 166.031, and that's the one I keep referencing, sir, going back to the Florida statutes, sets forth the procedures to be observed in amending municipal charters. Now, what does a review potentially lead to? It leads to an amendment. So the attorney general has said that when you're amending municipal charters, ultimately you can follow processes that are in the Florida statutes or in the charters. But what if there's a dispute or there's a misunderstanding or a conflict? That's what we have here. People are saying, no, you've got to do it, have to do it through a charter review committee. And it's my opinion that you don't have to do it through a charter review committee. You could, but you don't have to. And here's what Charlie Crisp said. He says, this office has consistently stated that the charter amendment provisions in section 166.031 prevail over conflicting provisions in a municipal charter. Indeed, Florida statutes itself provides the municipality may amend its charter as described above, which is the process that I described earlier, sir, even if the charter itself provides otherwise. So the attorney general, this was not interpreting a specific charter. It was interpreting what's 166 in the Florida statute does with regards to what local governments can do if they want to amend their charter. And so I have to take all these things into consideration when I read the language in Section 10 of the charter. And again, with legislative interpretation, you can't choose one interpretation that's going to render some other part of an ordinance, statute, or in this case, a charter, meaningless. And so what the courts prefer in legislative interpretation is to choose that meaning, that interpretation, that allows all of them to work together as best they can. And that, to me, is what the courts, if the court were ever to come down on this, that's what the court would decide, is that, yes, the Charter Review Committee is an option, but it's not the only option.
Any more questions?
I would just like to say this. Instead of dealing with the process, what is it you're concerned with? What's going to happen? This is what I'm trying to, if you read the charter, we could appoint a 5-person commission. I pick someone, the other members would pick someone, and you don't even have to be involved. This is better because you're involved. We're involving you. This is not part of the charter review. This is just open meetings saying, what do you want to see changed in there? And then ultimately, you're going to vote on it. So regardless of what the city council says, we're going to put things on there. You're going to vote on it. So we're not saying you're going to do this, we're going to change that, we're not. So what I'm trying to understand is, tell me what the problem is, and then we could fix it. If it's, because what we're dealing with is an interpretation. And we can argue this interpretation until the day it lands in court. And then a judge will say, he leans one way or the other. But until that day, arguing it doesn't help us, the residents of Palm Coast, get to a charter that is like this gentleman said, is going to help grow the city. Help us move the city forward. So, if you have real, your concerns are all real. If you have concerns that you can say, well, if we do it this way, this is what's going to happen or may not happen. I'd like to hear that because maybe we can adjust or fix that. But to argue the interpretation it's not getting it soon. Tell me why. Give me something. Well, if we don't follow this process, the people are not going to get what they want. And Okay, good. Here, I'll give it to you.
George Meagan, District 2. There's a constitution that says we shall operate by democracy, not by an arbitrary decision. We were told that you could do it, so we couldn't do it. That's exactly what happened here. We're going to do it. We're going to present it to you 60 days prior to the election. That's what the law says. And our committee has to be appointed by November 6th this year.
I don't know that you're going to come to that understanding in this forum. So we're still in the question period. I want to close this out and get back to public comment. Yes. So I'm going to pull this back. I'm going to ask for, and you have a question or a comment, because I want to get to all of your comments. So one more question, and then we'll go back to public comment.
Since 1999 and 1909, City of Palm Coast has increased double in population. Now, you know that most of the people that moved into certain sections, which now unbalances the original charter. So don't we have the right now to say, well, five people aren't enough to govern the city. We should have seven. So it's got to be an odd number. And now, we should now have a committee to determine how many people live in each section. And you find that some sections way over another section.
So you first were talking about the size of your city council, which you could change. That could be a charter amendment to make it a bigger, and it could be five, it could be seven. The city of Jacksonville has 19 people on their city council. Now, it's a city-county, and so it's a county commission and a city council, and so it's like a small legislature. Miami has 13. I mean, you can do whatever you want, so that would be, if somebody wants to make that as a recommendation to the council, you know, a larger council, that certainly is appropriate. And as far as redistricting, while it should be, it needs to be done every 10 years, if a city has, and I think your charter provides for it, if you have tremendous growth before 10 years, you could have the redistricting done sooner to keep those as much balance in the districts as possible. So, any other questions? And now the 3-minute time limit was not on the questions. So, the three-minute time limit is on the public comment. So that's why we weren't. I don't know that were you timing, Virginia? All right, so everyone was great in their earlier comments, so let's go back to public comments on anything in the charter, not in the charter, should be changed in the charter, that you want the council to consider when they look at the development of a potential ordinance for charter amendments. So I think you had your hand up for a long time, so let me get back to you.
John Brady, let me put this in terms that attorneys can understand, with all due respect. Yeah, that's over with. In reading chapter of state statute 166.031, paragraph 3, I will read it to you. A municipality may amend its charter pursuant to this section, notwithstanding any charter provisions to the contrary. That is as readable and as clear as it can be. And when you read Section 10, some of us have read, it says each person on the council shall appoint one person to be the review committee. Now, I think I heard Attorney Reichman say that this is not a charter review committee. So this is not a charter review committee. Admittedly, not a charter review committee. But we will be looking at amending the charter.
Kim Medley, District 2. I guess to Councilman Nabil's question, it's a matter of trust. It is a matter of trust. Our founders who put this document together, and it was approved by the Florida legislature, trusted that the first full review of the charter would be done by its citizens. Now, Mr. Reichman, you say that I'm reading this and I'm essentially diluting subsection 1, the charter amendment. The city council has used the charter amendment process. They did so in a very eloquent way with our elections, to change our elections from odd to even-numbered years so that we would realize a savings as citizens. That was done through the charter amendment process. It was done in accordance with 166.031. I don't have a problem with that. You did it. You put an ordinance. You put it on the ballot. People voted. We changed it. So, to me, by you taking this charter amendment process, you're diluting the charter review process. And it goes to a matter of trust. You're saying people won't attend. The city of Bunnell had a charter review committee. They're citizens. I have the applications here, the people that applied to volunteer. Their city commission had questions about it, too. But they went ahead with it. They came up with a schedule. They worked together. They had their city manager and city attorney ready to answer questions from the committee. And there was citizen participation. So to say that if you set up a committee, somehow you're not going to have citizen participation, it's a false argument. But it goes back to trust. And what I've heard repeatedly and read from minutes is the city thinks the people aren't sophisticated, educated, well-versed enough to handle this. So we're going to do this for you, and it's all going to be funneled through one person, and then we will tell you what's going to get put on the ballot. And that's the problem. That's what you lose. You lose the democracy, and you lose trust, because you're saying, we don't trust you to do this.
The public comment.
Ralph Lightfoot, District 2. You know what it sounds? It sounds like to me we have a document, but for some reason we don't want to follow that document. And then we get the lawyers involved. Find me a way around this. Okay? And this has been done in the past as well. I don't think that's the right way to govern. I think people are elected. Council people are elected. Make a decision. Don't look to the lawyers for a way out.
Let's go on with public comment. Okay.
Mr. Lightfoot, I serve as a charter officer in a capacity, several capacities, as the attorney for the city council. One of those is as an advocate. The other is as a counselor. I wasn't told to come up with work backwards from a result in this matter. Let's be very clear about that. So I want you and I want anyone else that may be listening to this to understand. I was simply asked to provide options in my own legal opinion of what was available to the city council. At no time whatsoever did anyone or any group instruct me to come up with a plan as an advocate for a certain position.
Sure, yeah. But if you have a question, you may ask.
Well, my name is Al Torres. It just appears to me that with all the what's going on, all the discussions, it seems right here, that this process that's going on doesn't seem to be in the interest of many of the people. So, I mean, he's hearing these comments, is this information going to be taken back to the city council and let them know that the feelings of the citizens, the way they're doing this process, is not really what, it's not in agreement that many of us think it's the right way to go. I mean, we believe in democracy and we're supposed to be doing, but it seems that, like, I agree with what Emily says and a couple of people said, that this process is not really going in the right way that we would like it to go.
All of these comments are being recorded in the minutes. They will be part of the report that I will be handing to the City Council when they meet at the end of November. So this is all part of the input that will go to them, and then they will determine if they want to proceed with developing an ordinance with any changes to the charter or if they do not want to. So, yeah. Come back to you. Comment over here.
Yes, this has been stated, George Mayo Palm Coast. This is not a charter review committee. This is another option of the way to do that. Whether you had five people sitting up here on stage as members that were appointed, or you as a facilitator, every citizen in Palm Coast had the right to come here and speak their mind. Whether it's to you or to the five people on the stage, to me, it's all the same. This is just giving everybody in Palm Coast come here and say what they think, what they would like, what they want, to just hear the viability of other questions. This is option B, if you want to call that, or option C. To me, it's one and the same, and I do not have a problem with the way this is being done.
Thank you.
Robert Brannon, I haven't heard you state one thing that you want. All you've done is argue about words that are in the charter. Don't answer me. I've heard enough of your politicking as it is.
George Megan. Thank you. We have a deadline, November 6th this year, to have the committee in place. The committee will meet to present to the City Council what we find needs to be done. We the people. And we're not going to wait till November 28th because it's beyond our deadline. We need that committee right away.
Okay. Any other comments?
Good evening, everyone. I waited to the end because I don't live in Palm Coast. My name is Josh LeClaire. I live in New Smyrna Beach, and I'll tell you that this happens everywhere. Maybe the process is different, but I think, you know, at least it's moving forward. As a comment, I think 10 years is a little too much to put in to change the charter because things can happen really quickly, and you might need to change things. That's my bit there. But I am also the president of the Volusia Flagler AFL-CIO, and we represent over 36,000 working women and men in Volusia and Flagler counties. And I came here tonight just to urge the City Council and those that work at the City of Palm Coast moving forward, dealing with the Laborers Union 630, to please treat folks with dignity and respect moving forward. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Other comments? Okay, so as I said before, there is one more meeting. We'll be dealing with sections 10 and 11, as well as public comments on any of the issues in the charter. So I welcome your attendance and participation. And did you have more public comment or just a question? We did, the fiscal one was already addressed. But when you come to make public comment, you can comment on any part of the charter. So if you haven't seen the charter, you know, either if you can get it online or get it from the city clerk so you can review it and then address any concerns you have about any part of it. It is next Thursday, the 26th, at the high school. Okay. Thank you all for your participation, the meeting, the public workshop. is adjourned. All right. Good night, and thank you for coming.